All right, we're going to talk about parables first, a little bit about what they are, and then we'll get into them. There's 17 weeks, and there's 30 to 35 parables, give or take. There's a lot of lesson there, and maybe we'll do two a class, and maybe we'll do one a class, and that type of thing. So, literally, a parable means throwing alongside. And so we would look at that and see a lesson that there was a comparison or there was a similarity between something and something scriptural. Those of you who are parents, have you ever, no, I take that back, I know you have, taken some type of event that happened in the life of your child and used that event to make a lesson out of it? Yes? Yes. Absolutely. You've taken something and you've not necessarily applied it back to Scripture at that moment, but you've made a moral lesson out of it because of the circumstances, and the circumstances allowed it. And that's what we're talking about when we're looking at all these, at the parables that are primarily in the Gospels, and I guess if you want to be even more direct as to where they are, primarily in the book of Matthew. We're in Jesus' ministry early, first 2 years. We're at the part where he's still doing the miracles and going through the countryside and speaking in these parables and addressing different things. And I think it's important when we look at these things to remember where the crowd was at the time that Jesus was speaking in these parables. Now, this morning we'll get to Matthew 13 because we're going to look at the wheat and the tares. And if you want to go ahead and turn there, you can, because we're also going to look at the reason why Jesus spoke in parables, which is in the same chapter. But what was... You're Jesus, you're a missionary. What's your first objective? Pardon? Know your audience, because what is a missionary trying to do when it comes to those people? Paul said he was all things to all people. He adapted his lesson for where he was standing. We're knowing who our audience is and what they need in order to be able to do what? To minister to them. Where was Jesus' audience at that particular point?
Farmers.
Pardon?
Farmers.
Fishermen? Nationality-wise, where were they? Jews. So what did they expect? How many... Dan gave you this answer Wednesday night, I guess, didn't he? Didn't we talk about how many prophecies there were? You know how many there are, right? Chuck knows, I know. Chuck, how many? Okay, got it. And those prophecies, how many of those 332 prophecies, and more specifically all those prophecies, however many the number is of the 332 that directly related to Jesus, how many of those were misinterpreted potentially? It would be all of them, wouldn't it? Because what were they looking for? Earthly king. Where did... I'll save that for later. If you're Jesus and you're going through the countryside and you're healing disease and you're providing food, where are you trying to get to at some point? You're dealing with physical first. And what second? Okay. As we get into the... What are we dealing with as we deal with parables, as Jesus speaks in parables? Which side? The physical or the spiritual side? He's teaching? Or did I miss... Where does Jesus want to go with the people he's talking to? Let me ask the question a different way. What is the purpose of Jesus' ministry? That's a pretty big question. You want me to narrow it down a little bit? Was Jesus trying to convert the masses, or was Jesus trying to prepare for the church? It's part two, isn't it? More so? He had an immediate... How long was Jesus' ministry? 3 years. Roughly 3 years. Was Jesus going to be able to do all the things that were necessary in those 3 years in preparing for the kingdom here? At what point did the apostles, or those that became the apostles that were from that inner circle, at what point did they understand truly what the plan was? Mumble, mumble, mumble. I agree, Tracy. Tracy said they didn't get it in full until Acts 2. And that's true. Because even at the point they're getting ready to do these things, until the Holy Spirit came upon them on that day, and they preached and they spoke in different languages, and they said things that were guided directly by God, that's the point at which the light came on. And so as you know what all of these issues are going to be, and you're ministering to those in the countryside, and you're looking to find those who are willing to follow, then we get into this section where Jesus begins to speak in parables. If I'm going to speak to one of my children and make some type of lesson out of what the event is that's got some type of moral point to it, why am I trying to do that? Somebody louder. I can't hear. Well, I want to keep them from making a mistake. Keep going. What's important, or what fits with that example that is real life when it comes to...
When you relate to it, you can apply it.
All right, Kathy said, when you relate to it, you can apply it. How do we learn? How do you learn? I mean, I'm visual. I need to see somebody do something before I'm able to do it. I struggle when I'm just reading the text. How many are like that? So, when you need to learn something, where do you go first? YouTube, right? Because you need to see a video. I'm trying to learn how to make knives. I've read 3 books and I don't get it. But I can go on YouTube and watch a 15-minute video and the light comes on. Well, how does that make application to speaking in a parable? What are we able to get, like Kathy's talking about? You get what the lesson is, and you see it applied in whatever this circumstance were, and suddenly you can connect the dots. Look in Matthew chapter 13. Verse 10. Matthew chapter 13, verses 10 through 17. And the disciples came and said to him, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" He answered and he said to them, "Because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For whoever has, to him more will be given, and he will have abundance. But whoever does not have, even when what he has will be taken away, even what he has will be taken away from him. Therefore I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. And in them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, which says, 'Hearing you will hear, and shall not understand, and seeing you will see, and not perceive. For For the hearts of this people have grown dull. Their ears are hard of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn, so that I should heal them. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For assuredly I say to you, many prophets and righteous men desired to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it. Who's he talking to? Those that were closest to him, not the masses. That's who he's giving this explanation to. What's beneficial about that as he's in this period of public ministry? What? You answered the question already that Jesus' purpose here was to prepare for the church. What do we need in order to be able to do that? We need strong leadership. How are we going to get that? Well, we're going to get that by kind of starting to separate a little bit between those that are looking for an explanation and those that wanting to grow and mature and those that are just along for the free bread. And in John, don't forget, in John, I think it's chapter 6, although this is one of those kind of things I just popped in, so I may be wrong about that part of it. But in John, there's a scripture that talks about many people turning away from Jesus and going back because this was too difficult to follow. And we've got these parables and we've got these wonderful lessons that have a real life application, and maybe they're from an actual event, or maybe they're from an event simply that could have been true, but they make for the person, they make a story for the person to be able to grab hold of and sink into. And so there's a little bit of this. I know sometimes I hear perhaps the comment, well, Jesus spoke in parables to make it easier to understand. That's not what he says right here. Not necessarily easier to understand just from the words that are coming out of his mouth. But the lesson that goes with it, and the people that he was talking to, and those that are around him that want to follow more closely, and now have an explanation. So, are our ears dull? Do we hear things so much that we don't want to hear? Do we put things out of our mind? You know? And many did, and many turned. What did the Jews do specifically? They went dull of hearing and put these things behind, and so on and so forth. Dirk?
Parables have a way of cutting through the clutter. If people who are sincerely interested in studying and learning about God's will and His Word are more apt to understand the parable because of the higher level of knowledge they're looking for. People who are just there for the bread, what's he telling us all these silly stories for? Let's get to the bread.
Get to the free bread part.
Did
you hear what Dirk said about the difference in the listener? The ones who were looking for more, who were truly interested in the spiritual food versus the physical food. And hopefully that was an adequate job of paraphrasing. Also, sometimes do you feel overwhelmed when you're studying something? Do you feel like it's too deep? Do you feel like it's too complex? What potentially do these type of lessons do with that? I know sometimes I feel like I'm getting too much information too soon. And especially the older I get, the less I'm able to grasp it all quickly. I know that many times I'll look at someone and I'll just say, you got to stop. You got to slow down. I'm only capable of so much input. You know, you got to make it a little bit less whatever for me. And certainly parables have that way. They have a way of simplifying it. You know, some of the best sermons I've ever heard in my life were some that were just simple sermons. Because what do? Man, you can grab hold of it. You can go with it. You can get the application thereof. Was everyone who followed Jesus a fan? So what else would parables have the advantage of as Jesus was going through the countryside and delivering these lessons? Kind of, am I too obtuse in that question? There we go. Who was that? Scott. If you're delivering a message and you know that you've got a certain group of people that's coming behind you and they're trying to undo everything you do, they're trying to look for any reason they can to put you in jail, they're trying to just be a thorn in your side, what do these allow Jesus to do? They allow him to convey a spiritual truth while keeping the dogs at bay. You know? And in many cases, those dogs aren't smart enough to even connect the dots on what the parable is, the application thereof. So, I mean, that's an advantage. Let me skip around. Look in, how long do parables have to be? Look in Luke chapter 4, verse 23. Physician, heal thyself. Would you consider that to be a parable? It says in front of it, probably your version says proverb, doesn't it? And he spoke to them this proverb. Physician, heal thyself. The Greek word there is parabole. Which, guess what comes from? Looks like, sounds like, you know, kind of thing. The word proverb itself takes on a little bit different connotation to me, to us, because when I think of that, I think of wise sayings that Solomon said and filled up a book full of those, 31 chapters, a chapter for every day of the month, depending on which month it is. But there's a lot of difference between the two. Are similarities between the two. Physician, heal thyself. It can be pretty short. It can be pretty simple. It can be almost nothing at all. What about Old Testament parables? Were there any? Think of one. That comes. I've got one that just pops out in my head. What about your head? There's a prize if you can guess the one that I'm thinking of. Pardon? That's it. Nathan comes to David and he talks about a man who had one little ewe lamb. Remember? And he talks about that and he says, David, you know, what should be done with this man? And David said, this man should be killed. And Nathan said, you're the guy. You are that man. And the situation was referring to David's ordering the death of Uriah the Hittite. You know, so he sends off Uriah to the front lines, and then he tells, well, first he tries to cover up his adultery with Bathsheba. Uriah will not comply, so he sends Uriah to the front lines. Uriah still does not get killed, and then he has the army withdraw from Uriah and leave him standing out there by himself. And Nathan says, you are that man. What is a parable not? You know what an allegory is? I don't use the term a lot. But in an allegory, everything has specific meaning. Okay? Not necessarily so in our parables. And there has been a time, and you can still pick up commentaries, depending on how old those commentaries are, that try to allegorize everything in the parables, all of it. And sometimes it's just not, we can't go that far. We're not talking about that. We can't go that deep. If you wanted to take the Good Samaritan, and in many ways, if you want to break it down and just go somewhere where it really doesn't go, you can take everything that's in the Good Samaritan and assign it something. The man who was beat is Adam. The world is Jericho. The Good Samaritan is Jesus. The robbers are the devil. And you can just keep going and keep going and keep going and keep going. When it comes to the parable of the Good Samaritan, Is that what our lesson really is on something like that? Could it be? Well, I mean, is there some truth to it? Sure, but is that where we're necessarily trying to go with that as we look what exactly the lessons of that particular parable are? So when we're talking about parables, we're not talking about something that's tremendously and deeply complex. But we are talking about a story that absolutely conveys a spiritual truth. Two rules, and we will apply these two rules for the entirety of the class when it comes to studying these parables. And one is find the main lesson, and number two is understand the context of what the parable is that we're talking about. All right? So we're going to, you know, you can use the, have you been to the movies and they show the end of the movie first and then they rebuild all the way up to it? You know what I'm talking about? And we'll do that for the parables. We will go find the main purpose, the main point of the parable. We will identify the context of the parable, and then we'll talk about what the meaning of it is. And we always want to try to do that, each one that we look in, just to help keep, and sometimes I think the context may even, it may not be reason one and two, it might be reason 1A and 1A. Because we can't deal, you got to have both of those things together when you're looking at what these are all about. All right, this morning we're going to look at the tares, two of them, the tares and the dragnet. And they're both in chapter 13. So you're already there. And for this particular parable this morning, not only do we have the parable in 24, verse 24, but we've got the parable explained in verse 36. So this one ought to be pretty simple as to what it was exactly that Jesus was trying to point. What I want you to feed back to me is, you give me the application to you in your life. You know, how these things go about. And something I want you to be thinking about as we read this, I started off asking the question to myself as I was studying this, what are the tares? And as I looked through this, I changed that question to who are the tares? Now, what is a tare? And who is the tare? You tell me what the right question actually to ask is. All right, as we think about it. Chapter 13, verse 10. Nope, I'm sorry. Chapter 13, verse 24. This is immediately after the parable of the sower and the seed. Another parable he put to them, saying, "The kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares amongst the wheat and went his way. But when the grain had sprouted and produced a crop, then the tares also appeared. So the servants of the owner came and said to him, 'Sir, did you not sow good seed in your field? How then does it have tares?' He said to them, 'An enemy has done this.' And the servant said to him, 'Do you want us then to go and gather them up?' But he said, 'No, lest while you gather up the tares, you also uproot the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest, and at the time of harvest I will say to the reapers, first gather together the tares, bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn.'" You know what darnel is from a weed? You know what that is? That's what this tare is. It grows up and it looks like wheat from the get-go, and then it has a little head on it, and then you realize this is not wheat. Do you see that could be a problem when it comes to planting a wheat field? We got something in there that disrupts or pollutes the crop. This is not necessarily, though, the kingdom in this parable that we're talking about, right? We're talking about the whole world. Have you ever driven through a wheat field? Maybe you've driven through Kansas, someplace where it's a lot of it. I remember going driving through wheat fields in Belarus, and it was just, you know, you hear about the Russians growing wheat, producing more wheat than any country in the world or any place in the world, and it's everywhere. But you just overlook acres and acres and acres and acres and acres and acres, and when it's ripe, it's just this beautiful golden color, right? Well, when you get to that point, can you imagine all those acres, thousands and thousands of acres, if they had been sown with a weed right next to them? How do you plant wheat? Do you get a row, get a middle buster, move the dirt out, and then put one little seed every 6 inches when you go down there? Not hardly. Have you ever seen a wheat field that was in rows? What is it? It's just one massive field of nothing but grain. So if you're looking at that and you're looking at this item and this item and they're both just put in the ground and they've sprouted up and they're both green and you don't see anything until the point you get to the point where the head starts to come on the wheat and suddenly you realize that this one looks different from this one, you don't know what's happened. There's no reason to suspect it. Are we like that in the world today when we look around and we're all here under God's blue sky, right? We're all kind of looking at the same things, and then suddenly you realize that something you thought you were looking at isn't something that you thought you were looking at. Have an impact on you? Does it make a difference in how you look at things? Turn to chapter, stay in the chapter and go to verse 36. Tell me, now that we've read that parable, what is the main lesson? We're going to go back to our two things that we said. You can read 36 and forward if you want to before you answer, or you not, it doesn't really matter. But what is the main lesson that we get out of this parable?
Understand what are tares.
Pardon?
Understand what are the tares.
Understand what are the tares. I hope we do. I hope we can. Dirt? Dirk says everyone in the church is not perfect. You know, I agree with you, Dirk. But I have a follow-up question to that. Is this parable only talking about the church? Okay. No, I'm not. The reason I blurted out that Dirk said there were always people around who were just trying to agitate.
There's evil in the world no matter what we do.
Yeah. There is evil in the world. There is always evil in the world. Yes. Hypocrisy?
Yes.
Hypocrisy? All right. I started to say, Cain, did you have your hand up? But apparently, Fran, you had your hand up. Except you don't. I'm at home and I say something and I call you Fran and him Cain. I do it all the time, and I'm afraid I'm going to do it in public. But go ahead, Fran. What's the... Really? I did that? I'm sorry. I'm going to go to Stephanie. You think about it. And I do apologize. I shouldn't have done that.
To me, it summarizes that you're the end of the world.
All right.
Don't worry about it now.
And don't worry about it now? Is that what... Oh, Lord, these weeds are holding me down. All right. Fran?
Weeds are very sneaky. They can pop up anywhere, anytime, in anybody's
life. They are sneaky. Weeds are sneaky. And they just look so nice and green and neat early on. And then, Dave? You don't sacrifice the good for the sake of the bad. Excellent. Morris?
Sacrifice the good for the sake of the bad.
All right, hang on. See, this is why I don't have, because I don't have eyes in everywhere. All right, Morris, and then I'll come back. All right, to paraphrase, I'm thinking back to, Morris is thinking back to the Jews and how as they interacted with all the people that were around them all those years and all those things that choked God out as we went through all of that. All right? All right. Certainly, and there are. There are always wicked. There are always sinners. There are always unbelievers. Absolutely. Jerry? They will. Jerry talks about in the end, there will be those that will be cast in the fiery furnace. And what, Jimmy? Jimmy's point is the weeds that are in the garden, you leave them and they will get to the point where they can take over everything else become more so than what the crop itself is supposed to be. Certainly that's the case in my yard. I know that when the weed chokes out my good St. Augustine instead of the other way around. I wrote down two things. Y'all hit on all of them, by the way. Mankind is either good or bad. There is no in between. It's either good or evil. Both exist. You can't ride the fence. You can't play the middle. It's either good or evil. And number two, God will judge either good or evil at the end of time. When you were in college, did you have some of those classes that were pass fail? I'm not sure I really liked those classes that were pass fail, to be honest. I mean, I wanted my A or my B or my C or my D. Maybe a WF. You know what that is? Withdrawn while failing. That's 4 hours of zero grade point. Try that, you know, explaining that to a person you're trying to get a job with. That pass-fail stuff is, you're either right or you're wrong. You're either in or you're out. You know? And it can be tough. It can be tough. Have we read now the explanation, or do I need to? We hadn't read it. We read the parable. The bell's already rung. Is that what you're telling me? You know, there's also a parable called the parable of the dragnet, and it's in the end of this chapter, and it's the same thing. Net was dropped down and the fish were caught in it, and some were good and some were bad and they were thrown away. Final comments or anything? You did a good job with helping me out with the parable this morning. And if we're going to take anything from it, then we're just left with that basic lesson, which is there is always going to be evil, and that evil is always going to be something that we have to deal with. I asked you earlier who or what are the tares. I don't have time to get into that necessarily. But as we go through this world and we interact with the world, there are going to be good and there are going to be evil. And in Judgment Day, those that are good are going to have a reward with heaven, and those that are evil are not. And that's that parable. So thank you very much. And see you in worship service.